O'Clock News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 24th of February, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use.
I got news.
Uh-oh.
No, this is good news.
Oh, good.
I'm a grandpa again.
Aw. Congratulations.
Friday night, Alexis was born 8 pounds, 8 ounces to my youngest daughter, Amy.
Congratulations, Amy. Congratulations, Alexis. Yeah. Congratulations, Dave.
Both
congratulations,
are doing
Lori.
Great. Now, fun begins.
This fun always begins with babies.
Where's the cigars?
Yeah.
Oh, gave those up many, a few years
chocolate
ago.
Chocolate cigars.
Yeah, there you go.
<laughs> There you go.
I didn't give them up.
Yeah. Selfish one of the right here.
Thank you.
Apple's decision to give up its ultra-thin MacBook Air notebook computer, a battery that users can't replace themselves, bucks a growing trend, and some say it could hurt sales. With more and more PC buyers choosing notebooks over desktops, many want the option of carrying a spare battery or adding a high-capacity battery to get more hours of use. Some users want more control over their notebook, and there's no doubt that not having a user-replaceable battery will not appeal to those people, said the vice president of marketing for Fresh Battery of Irvine, California. Which sells replacement and spare notebook computer batteries online. Well, who would have guessed that? Apple's move to batteries that users can't replace themselves likely will worry many consumers, said the director of marketing for batteries.com. Yep. Apple's iPhone smartphones also have batteries, of course, that users can't replace themselves. So do iPods. That has not seemed to hold back the iPod buying market.
Well. It can't be easily replaced yourself. You can replace them yourself.
Yeah, well, right.
Yeah. That's not the market for the MacBook Air. It's someone who wants as light as they can, as thin as they can. You're not going to carry an extra battery anyway if you're in that market.
Right. Apple says it uses an integrated battery in the MacBook Air in order to make the product thin and stylish, form over function. Apple has been offering spare and replacement notebook batteries for a long time, but found that few people were buying them, according to a company spokes individual. People are more likely to carry their notebook's power adapter than a spare battery. What planet is this guy from? Many airlines are adding power outlets on their planes, eliminating the need for a spare battery on long flights. The lack of a user-replaceable battery is likely to limit sales of MacBook Air, an analyst, N.20 Technologies. I don't even know how that's pronounced, so I'm going to stop talking about him. Style-conscious consumers might be okay with the MacBook Air shortcomings. The product is a great design statement. It's very elegant. But compared with Lenovo's new ThinkPad X300 notebook, Apple's MacBook Air is light on features. The X300 has a 13-inch wide display with LED backlighting and a full keyboard and a thin chassis like the Air. It also has a user-replaceable battery, Ethernet port, and DVD drive, all features the Air lacks. Lenovo's X300, which is officially available starting Tuesday, and I would love to be first in line, costs more because it uses solid-state memory instead of a hard drive. Apple's MacBook Air has optional solid-state storage. The X300 costs $2,700 to $3,000, depending on the version, and the MacBook Air costs $1,800 to $3,100, depending on the version.
I have never carried an extra battery with any of my laptops, but I always carry the power cord.
I much prefer to carry an extra battery. When I'm wandering around campus, and I leave the office at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I don't come back till 7 o'clock at night, having an extra battery with me is much more important. I'm in meetings all day, and I may not be sitting anywhere near a wall plug. In fact, I go to meetings in rooms that don't even have wall plugs.
You need better designed rooms.
Yeah. So, yeah, for me, it's a much better deal to have an extra battery. The laptop I carry around actually is one in which I can replace and already have replaced the DVD drive, which I truly don't need every day, with an extra battery. So I get 6 to 8 hours of battery off this little thin notebook that still weighs under 2 pounds.
Yeah, so. Apple had that in a couple of previous models.
Yes, and it was lovely.
The weird thing about, the thing with the MacBook Air batteries, it's probably more than half the size and half the weight of the computer.
Right.
It's really, really thin, but spread out over almost the entire size of the computer.
But the real problem is not today. The real problem is in a year when the battery is half its has lost half its life.
Well, and you buy a new computer.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, for $129, you can get a new battery installed for you, and that's about the price of notebook batteries anyway. So it's
but you're still without your MacBook for several days.
Better service shops will be able to do it quicker.
Yeah. Still. All right. Our first caller.
I don't think they've skewed them yet. We can't order the new batteries yet because they haven't been able to run out yet.
Right. Our first caller is Tom from Wilkett, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Well, I've got a laptop. It's about a year old, a Dell, and it's got running XP on it. I'm having a problem with Java. I went to a NASCAR page, and if you hover over one of the NASCAR.com, if you hover over one of the links, it says JavaScript : CNN launch video.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't. It does on my desktop. It launches the video no problem. Now,
what are you using? IE or Netscape or Firefox?
It does it on both Firefox and IE. And then it runs on both on my desktop. Now, I uninstalled and reinstalled the Java and Adobe Flash. I don't know where to go next. There's a long address there when you hover.
What are you, one of the videos you're saying?
Yeah. NASCAR.com. And then right in the middle, there's a...
Yeah, the pictures, and they've got video the
control room. Yeah, the video control room there in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Watch now.
Oh, there it is. Yep. Yeah.
Do you remember what version of Java you installed?
Whatever it was, newest one, I went and did this yesterday.
And where did
installed the oldest, the one I had, and then...
Where did you get it from?
Java.com.
Okay. There's a fight between Sun, which makes Java, and Microsoft, which makes something they call Java that isn't anything like Java. Actually, Sun sued them and won, and Microsoft calls theirs now the JVM, the Java Virtual Machine. Some websites want to use the Microsoft version of Java, and some websites want to use the Sun version of Java, and you may need to load both. Nick and Dave are both trying to see which version NASCAR uses.
I did exactly same thing on the two different computers, and it works on one and doesn't on the other.
Right, but you may have two different versions of Java, and that's probably the problem. We'll look into this. I can't quite get there at the moment, but we'll look into this and see what this needs. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 15 minutes after the hour at Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We had a thought for Tom over the break, which is what we do our best thinking. Right, exactly. Tom, one of the things you might want to think about is if you have upgraded to Internet Explorer 7, it will block you from doing certain things. There's a tiny little bar that comes up near the top of the screen that says, you know, trying to do something interesting to your machine or whatever. Click here if you want to allow it. And then you have to say, yes, I want to be able to let Windows media files play. Yes, it's okay to do that. No, really, I mean it. Please, with sugar on top. Then they'll play. So it may well be the problem is the security features that were downloaded with Internet Explorer 7, which you may have on one machine.
Said he was also using Firefox. Also, he might want to check that if he was using a firewall in that program.
Right.
Because he said his other machines were working. Right. If it's a firewall, to check that to make sure he's not blocking that aspect.
And it looks like on the NASCAR front page, they're using Flash or the video snippets, which is version 9 something. And when you actually get in to play the video, it's Windows Media Video, WMV files, which you need a player for as well. Windows should play it with Windows Media Player. Should.
Yeah. Right. Well, but that's what I had here in Vista. I had a little pop-up that basically I had to say yes, 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 yes. All right. Disk encryption. I almost made a severe error there.
Yeah, that was a good one.
The disk encryption technology used to secure data in your Windows, Apple, and Linux laptops can be easily circumvented. According to new research out of Princeton University, the flaw in this approach, they say, is that data previously thought to disappear immediately from dynamic RAM, or DRAM, actually takes its time to dissolve, leaving the data on the computer vulnerable to thievery, regardless of whether the laptop is on or off. That's because the disk encryption key unlocked via a password when you log onto your computer, is held in DRAM. If a thief can get hold of the key, he can get into the disk. We demonstrate our methods by using them to defeat three popular disk encryption products. BitLocker, which comes with Windows Vista, FileVault, which comes with Mac OS X, and DMCrypt, which is used with Linux, according to Ed Felton, a Princeton professor on his blog, Freedom to Tinker. The researchers, which also included participants from the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Wind River Systems, have created a captivating video demonstrating a process when using a program dubbed BitUnlocker that can be used to snatch the data. In the video, the narrator explains it takes seconds for data to fade and that the process can be slowed by cooling the memory chips. They chill the memory chips to around minus 58 degrees with a liquid spray and remove them without affecting the content. The chips can even be switched to a different computer to read them. Liquid nitrogen can be used to cool the chips for hours, according to the researchers. This is deadly for disk encryption products because they rely on keeping master decryption keys in DRAM. Felton adds that even using trusted computing hardware doesn't help. The advantage of hardware-based encryption is that all the encryption key management and access controls all happen inside the chip, so there's no software loss, but that doesn't ensure that it'll happen. The big thing here is it's unlikely to happen to you since, you know, you turn off your machine and about 5 to 10 seconds later, all the data have disappeared. So It would have to be some sort of Mission Impossible thing that grabs your laptop, cold freezes it, brushes it out somewhere.
It goes back to physical access. If someone has physical access to your computer, no security will stop them.
Right. If they want it enough, they'll go get it. Yeah. But I'm not entirely certain this is something we have to jump into and worry about.
Yeah, I don't think you got the national secrets down there.
Right. Our next caller is Amesh from Clarence, New York. Welcome, Amesh. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have two computers, one hardwired to my router, another is a laptop, which is wireless. How do I go about printing from a wireless laptop to the printer, which is wired to my desktop?
You've got to set up the printer in that it's wired. If that's got the printer hooked up to you, you got to set that up as a shared device.
Actually, it is.
Well, you got to make sure.
Okay, now, well, let's back up a step. You have a router which is both wired and wireless.
No, just the one router which is, the wireless router. I have just one wireless router which goes to the back of my desktop.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you've got a hard wire into the back of your desktop.
Right.
From the router.
And a laptop that's wireless.
That is correct. And I also have the workgroup names for the desktop and the laptop to be the exact same.
Good. Are they both getting IP addresses in the same range, like 10 dot something or 192.168 dot something?
I am not sure. I haven't checked that.
They must. They must be on the same network in order to do that.
It's unlikely for the wireless router to have two networks, but I've seen it happen. The wired is one network and wireless is the other network.
Right. So make sure they're on the same network. Then you have to share the device, and you have to either allow everybody on Earth to print to it, or you have to have a login from the laptop on that other machine.
Yeah, what operating system is running on each computer?
XP on both. Home edition.
If both computers have the exact same username, that makes it easiest. Because what happens is on your desktop machine, you go into your printer settings and you share the printer to the network. Then on the laptop machine, you browse the network, log into that desktop computer, and access the printer. In order to log into the desktop computer, you must have a username and password on that desktop computer. So either the laptop has to have the same username, or you make a username on the desktop for the laptop to log into.
Got it.
That, a lot of times, is the tricky bit.
I will take a look at that.
Yep. Give it a shot. Let us know.
Thanks.
In most cases, the Windows default username is owner, but you can set up your own username.
But even with
as
different names, you should
it.
Be able to still even browse it. And
you should be able to browse it, but then you got to do a login as.
Right.
No, I haven't had.
And he said they were XP Home.
Might want to double check, make sure that he's done the service pack too.
Right.
Because with Home, the security is totally different.
And the other problem is the Windows firewall will block file sharing and printer sharing unless you open that service. That could be his problem.
That could be the problem right there.
That's what I was going to say. Because normally you don't have to create the actor name. It's just by taking off the firewall and then you do a discovery, add printers, and you tell it to search the network as long as it's out there.
Right, as long as you said anybody can print.
Yeah.
You'll win. All right. Our next caller is Liz from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Liz. What's your question?
Good morning. I have a Dell Inspiron laptop, and I'm unable to get on the internet wirelessly.
Is the wireless turned on?
Yeah. There's an internal card.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If I go to a restaurant or a hotel, I can get on.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is the actual wireless router...
You have to have a wireless router in your house.
Inside of that, if that feature has been turned off, so you can turn that feature on inside that box.
What operating system are you running?
It's Windows XP Home.
Okay, down at the bottom right corner, you see the little icon that tells you whether or not it found a network?
Yes.
Yeah, there's two steps. First, you have to connect to the wireless network.
Is there an X through that?
If I point to the wireless, it comes up wireless network connection Linksys.
Yeah.
Speed 11.0.
Right.
Oh, it just...
Yeah.
And
it sounds like your computer is talking to the wireless router.
Yeah,
and
signal strength, excellent. And status connected.
And the next step is the wireless router
talking
to the
internet. Now, did it say it's connected?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. And how do you connect that router to the internet?
How do I connect the router to the internet?
Right. Do you have Frontier DSL or do you have...
It's front, yes.
All right. And that is connected into the wireless router?
Yes.
Into the correct...
We have a desktop also connected.
And that gets in no problem.
Right. My son has a MacBook and he can get on the internet here.
Okay. So it says you've got an excellent connection and you're connected. What happens if you click on your browser?
Like
Google? Like Internet Explorer.
If I click on Google, it says that it cannot display the page.
Does it say why? What's the rest of the message? Now you may have to check your IP address. You may be connected to the wireless router, but you may not be getting an address or the internet.
See, here's the problem what does it say?
It says, Internet Explorer cannot display the web page, most likely causes. You are not connected to the internet. The website is encountering problems.
Yeah, all right. Here's the thing. With many types of routers...
See, the thing of it is
you need a network administrator, and her router
is set up.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody else, her son can get through, so that's not the problem. It's not that the wireless part is not connected to the internet.
But she can go to a restaurant and get connected, no problem.
Exactly. So the problem is between her and the router.
And I say it's probably the router. If everybody else
in her house can get her son can get on wirelessly.
But yet she can go to a restaurant wirelessly and get on.
Right. So the problem is her and the routers. She's not talking to that router specifically for some reason.
But it's seeing it.
Or the router is not letting her through.
Yeah. What may happen is your computer is talking to the wireless router, and that's your wireless signal. But it may not be giving you an address. If you go to the start menu and choose run, and then type ipconfig, all one word, it will tell you what your address is.
Right. Wait a minute, who set this up, though?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is that
maybe
whoever set it up...
Maybe they put the MAC addresses in.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they might have put the MAC addresses.
Who set this wireless router up for you?
A friend of mine.
All right, you need to talk to that friend and find out if he or she actually set this up to only allow certain computers to talk through your router. It's very likely that when that person set your thing up, he or she mistyped your MAC address. And so you can't get in because it doesn't recognize your MAC address. Talk to your friend and tell them and ask them how they set it up and get them back. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Chris, Rob, Nick, you. 30 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. You know the story. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 34 minutes after the hour,
professional.
Chris is awake. Very nice. Quebec's provincial police said Wednesday that they had dismantled the largest and most damaging computer hacking network ever uncovered in Canada, a ring that touched almost a million computers in 100 countries. And that's metric. The Sûreté du Québec. The Sûreté du Québec, the SQ, and RCMP officers carried out 17 lightning-fast raids in 12 towns and cities across Quebec, including Montreal. Police raiding parties arrested 16 suspects between the ages of 17 and 26, while also seizing dozens of hard drives and other computer components. This hardware is believed to contain incriminating data to document the alleged ring, says SQ Captain Frederick Gaudreau. This is a new form. I don't speak French. The only French I know, let's see. Je veux parler avec la plume de ma tante, which means may I please speak to the pen of my aunt. This is a new form of organized crime. He told reporters, that's the French I know. Summoned to SQ headquarters in Montreal in early afternoon. And I know a couple of other words that I won't use on television or on the radio or anywhere else. Savvy youngsters who have grown up with the computers can take advantage of lax or inattentive users connected via broadband to the internet. Captain Gaudreau alleged the Ring's operators extended their electronic tentacles from some of Quebec's smaller towns to seize control via sophisticated remote access software of a vast network that spanned the globe by using Trojan horse and worm software.
And able to leap over tall buildings.
With single bounds, right. Poorly protected computers can be hijacked and turned into zombies, even while the users wondered why their internet connection has slowed so dramatically. The hackers use these hijacking techniques to carry out crimes such as identity theft, data theft, and denial of service. These acts cost an estimated $45 million U.S. dollars in damage, which is about $3.84 Canadian, according to Captain Gaudreau, to governments, businesses, and individuals. He refused to provide any further breakdown, such as an estimate of the volume of financial fraud committed. Victims of the Ring had neglected to either properly configure their network firewalls or keep their antivirus software up to date, opening the door for the Ring's kingpins to plant malicious software programs with impunity. Each of the hackers detained yesterday surreptitiously controlled an average of about 5,000 computers. 5,000 computers.
So, you know, some rough estimates say that half of all the computers operating today are infected with something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say that's a conservative estimate.
Oh, yes.
Actually, I just read or listened to an interesting podcast with Steve Gibson on a new product from Microsoft called Microsoft Steady State.
Oh.
Which, it's a free program for XP. And if you run, say, a lab or, you know, a hotel or a coffee shop where you want to give people access to the computer, but you don't want them to be able to do anything, well, you don't want them to do anything bad.
Yeah.
The steady state thing, every time the user logs out or the computer reboots, it's back to the way it was before.
Yep.
So no matter what they install, no matter what they try to do, you just reboot and it's back.
Yep. We've been doing that forever with virtual machines.
Yeah.
When you log off, the machine goes away and it picks up the image the next time.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Our next caller is Mary from Clarkson, New York. Welcome, Mary.
Amy.
What's your question? Amy. Who did I say?
Mary.
I didn't say Mary. I said Amy.
You
I
heard myself. Mary. Don't.
See, Amy's behind me.
Busted. Welcome, Amy.
That's
what's
a palindrome.
Your question? No, it isn't. There's no R in Amy.
Go ahead, Amy.
Listen, I have a couple ancient computer monitors, keyboard. I don't know. I'm so illiterate when it comes to this stuff. But disk drive.
Yeah.
I think these are circa 1970. I'm not sure. They're really, really old things.
Okay.
I have no use for them. What do I do with them?
Normally, what I do with stuff I want to get rid of.
Yeah.
And I happen to be lucky living right on Empire Boulevard. I put it out to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we now start, wife and I and my tech start taking bets on how long it's going to last out to the curb.
Well, I'm out in the boondocks.
Well, you'd be surprised. People trolling around.
Yeah.
It will, especially on trash day.
Mm-hmm.
Put it out on trash day because you always got folks. I don't care. You could live out in East Cupcake. And they'll go trolling around for metal and scrap.
Okay.
So if you put them out there on trash day.
I had people actually fighting over a desktop that I put out on the curb one time. I didn't have the heart to run out and tell them it's just a shell.
Yep.
There's no drives. There's no RAM.
Not to mention the entertainment factor.
Well, yeah, right. We made popcorn. We watched the whole thing.
Just try putting it out to the curb. One, you know, a couple, say two of the monitors on your trash day.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you they don't last long.
The big issue is that it's illegal to put electronics in your regular garbage because of the hazardous wastes in them.
Is it silicon or something that's in there?
Well, it's the lead in monitors is the big thing. Lead and mercury and bromides and a lot of the other stuff.
Okay.
There is a recycling company in town, Rochester Computer Recycling and Recovery. They have an office on Central Avenue downtown and on 251 at 96 in Victor. And they will take electronics to be recycled. Some of them they just break down to components. Some of them they actually refurbish and sell. So rochestercomputer.com will do that for you.
Okay.
And it's basically all the hazardous waste end up in the trash, and that's not a good thing.
Right.
The real big thing to worry about, and I've heard from this with Steve Gibson too, is if you throw away a computer, physically destroy the hard drive.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of stories about dumpster diving, especially behind office buildings, where a PC's thrown in the garbage with, you know, dead hard drive written on it. Mm-hmm. Someone picks it up, uses something like SpinRite or Norton Unirase, and fixes the hard drive, gets all the company's confidential data back, and, by the way, a free computer.
Right.
So now, do I use a sledgehammer to destroy this drive? Is that how I do
that? That would work.
That okay. would, yeah. Physically yeah. destroyed is about the only guaranteed
I have a friend
method.
Who is a gunsmith, lives out in the middle of nowhere. And
yeah, if you have a couple of carbide drill tips, you can drill some holes through it.
Or if you take a hammer,
sledgehammer to it.
Yeah. You lay it on the desktop, flat on the desktop, mm-hmm. and just take a hammer and right into the center of it. Mm-hmm. Guarantee you that's going to knock the armatures off.
Yeah, if you feel like it, open it up and physically scratch all the platters up.
Trying to get the
that can be tricky.
The little screws.
Just pound that at half a dozen times with a sledgehammer, you win.
Sounds like a weekend project to me.
There you go. Yeah, okay, save them until
for the whole
really,
family.
Save them until you're really angry with somebody.
Right. Take a baseball
there
bat
you go.
To it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, all Mary, right. Amy, Fred, Nancy. I don't really care.
That's Amy.
I know it's Amy. I got it written down right in front of me here. Thank you.
Palindrome of Bolton would be not lob.
Fred is our next.
Fred is our next caller.
Fred is our next caller.
Do we have
caller.
Time for our next caller?
Yeah.
Our next caller
the
is Fred
on the,
from
window
Greece, New York. Oh, now you're in trouble. That was Dave Enright, Mr.
Well,
Lenton
that's what he looked
bad.
Like. I
you
mean,
didn't
we
catch it because he's on the phone.
What's her name? Jessica. We were calling Jessica the headband.
Right.
I mean, Rob, we see his head with the hat on there and the head's going up and down like a bobblehead.
I know. He's tall enough to be seen, actually, over the...
You forget I have the buttons in here.
See, yeah, that's why I said it was him, not me.
When you were gone...
Just waiting. Just
we
wait
were
until,
calling Jessica the headband.
Just
because
wait until story
all we
hour with Uncle Dave. Just you
headband.
Wait.
All we can see on you, though, is your head with the hat on it and the head's going up and down like a bobblehead.
That's not all I can see from here, but that's, yeah, I got a shot.
There'll be
side.
More, no worries, but I have to be polite. The camera's on.
Right. Our next caller, poor Fred from Greece, has this question, and we're in here doing whatever we do. Welcome, Fred. What's your question?
Good morning. I'm running a computer, running Linux, Ubuntu, that's a long-term service.
Right.
And added a CD writer as a master, kept the CD reader as the slave. BIOS sees it. Go into Ubuntu, and the disk manager sees it. Computer sees it. But you can't mount the CD reader. It freezes up the machine. When you try to put a disk in, its door opens, it spins, and then the machine freezes. I've gone into file system of ETC, then into the section that's FSTAB, and there is, it notes the CD writer, but there's nothing for the CD reader.
Uh-huh. Okay, here's, I think, where your problem lies. Do me a favor and disconnect from the motherboard and from the power supply the CD reader.
Okay.
And try it. I'll bet what's happening is... either the motherboard wants cable select or doesn't want cable select, or something odd is going on between the two.
Yeah, newer devices cannot be master slave; they have to be cable select.
Right, and so it's very confused. It's almost seeing two devices, but not really, and it can't select one or the other. So, what you need to do is absolutely remove the slave drive and see if the CD writer itself works without the slave drive. We're going to take
and
a break.
If it does, check your manual and try cable select on
right.
both of them.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 44 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 49 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, and if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
You're giving me a lot tonight.
You're not going to get all of it. We got more callers.
What?
Get or go. Your choice.
Okay. As Ricky would say...
this may well be the calm before the storm.
Lucy, let me explain. Okay, and I'm sure Steve runs into this, as do other repair shops. When you get a repair done, like 3-4 months ago, and then you call 1-800-I-can't-speak-English and get their help, and they mess it up more that you've already done, and then bring it in and want, oh, us to fix it under, well, I just had it in 3 months ago. Yeah. And it worked up until then, and you tell us that, oh, you called 1-800, I can't speak English, and they had you do a bunch of stuff, and you want me to cover the repairs that I did before? And then only to find out, and this is going to be a good one, because I have the pleasure now of this individual telling her that little Johnny, because she said, well, what you got it, you know, well, since it isn't covered underneath, can you at least get it back up and running and clean it up? Because it seems like the hard drive is full, and I put 160 gig hard drive in there.
The hard drive is full, and she's got a teenager?
I think little Johnny has been discovering adult porn, because the pictures on there, there's got to be close to 6-7 gig.
Nice.
And he's been very active, and I got to break it to the
or mother. Actually not. I mean, how, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, it's all adult porn. I mean, you know, like we've said before, you can find that anywhere on the web. It's out there. You get blasted with and everything else. But again, that's also causing the machine to slow down and act up and cause all your issues. And again, it's another one of these that I'm using it for my business. Folks,
don't let the kid
use it.
You've
got to make up your mind. Heck, you can go to Woot right now. We're just looking at Woot, and you can get a computer for $250, which is not a bad system. You can throw Linux on it and never have to worry about it. But if you're going to use a machine for home and for your kids, you're going to run into
issues.
Yeah,
it's just generally a bad idea.
It's not going to work. And, you know, yeah, we clean it all up and get it in there. That repair, once we get it done, only covers it till you get it home and start using it. Once you use it for a few weeks and something else develops, I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Even a few days, we've had customers come back a day later. It's still broken. No, you broke it again.
Yes.
LimeWire has been reinstalled. Kazaa's been reinstalled.
Yep, that's exactly what happens.
This is, again, you know, I cleaned it all off before, and you can sit there and see shortly after we got it back, Junior there went in and started looking at all his adult porn and down all this stuff.
Right. So we used to spend an inordinate amount of time in the Saunders College fixing laptops that faculty had taken home and let their kids use and their family use and everything else. Ever since we locked them all out of that, all they can do is use them, not install anything or any of that stuff. We've had a lot fewer problems.
And that's what folks have to do, is they have to take ownership. And I mean, this goes back to a couple of my other rants and everything else. Adults have to take control. And I mean, again, this one, I wound up, because there's other kids on this computer, but I wound up wiping out all the passwords. And I set it up right now that the adult has the password.
It's very easy on Windows and Mac to make a second account for the kids. Give
that
them their own.
That has right. Very limited.
Yeah, give them a standard account, limited account. Yeah. Don't let them install stuff.
That's what right. I now lock them out.
Or when the parent says, I don't know the password, the kid hasn't told me.
Oh, that.
Oh, that.
Don't even go there. I mean, that one really rips me off, and I change that as fast as you can say Jack Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's done, it's gone, and I give, like you said in this one, I'm giving the parents the password. They are taking control. Now, whether they choose to do it or not, I can't control that.
Right.
So these folks that sit there and get all porked off because, oh, yeah, they get it home, and then they do it, and this is just costing me so much money. Well, yeah, and it's going to continue to keep costing you money until you take control.
Yeah, my favorite are the parents who say, I don't want to upset my child.
Too bad.
That's your job.
Yeah.
Look in the dictionary under parent. Your job is not to be your kid's friend. They got a million friends.
I didn't want to upset
my parents. They only get two parents. Be one of them.
We've used that excuse a lot to switch people into the Macintosh because you don't have to worry as much about that type of stuff. And
yeah, but it's still not going to stop them from getting to the porn,
right. Yeah, the porn
and everything
is,
else,
is,
and
is
I don't care.
There.
You know, that's going to fill up a machine. And like I say, now it puts me in an awkward position, too, because I got to sit there and wait up and the kids come along and tell the parent, well, you know, you got to address what's on this hard drive and politely tell them that, oh, your little Johnny there has been downloading gigabytes of porn.
Here's my favorite. I'm in the chat room. As you know, if you go to the Soundbites website, you can get into the chat room. Alpha Rap says, I knew a 13-year-old who installed NetNanny on the computer so his parents wouldn't see his porn. Gives a whole new meaning to parental control.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
That's very funny.
Yeah, you got to take control, folks. I mean, you know, last time I knew.
All right, there we go.
This is quality time.
All right, kiddies, it's time to wipe out your cocoa mugs. Get out of your footy jammies, because if we can manage to give him his shots, we'll put Uncle Dave back in the rocking chair for another week, and we'll see him again. We'll see him again next week on Story Hour.
Wait until
with Uncle
week.
Dave. All right, now we're going to go back to the phones and hopefully a slight modicum of sanity. Our next caller is actually Mary from Rochester. Hi, Amy. What's your question?
No, it's Mary.
I know that.
Hi. Okay, I think this might be fast because I think I figured it out while I was on hold.
Excellent.
I gave my husband my old computer, and we use Thunderbird for email. We both have separate Roadrunner accounts, and he changed it so that his account would be on there, but instead it just added it. So I found my way into account settings for Thunderbird, and right. I show mine, and it shows his. Now, if I just click on mine, and if I click on remove account, will it just make him just the sole person on his computer?
Yes,
and it will. But it won't screw up mine.
No, it will not.
Right. It will also remove all of the mail in that account.
Yeah, so if you've got any emails there that you haven't read,
keep, that you haven't moved to your new computer.
Yeah. Right. Okay, because he has opened it a few times when I've had mail waiting for me.
So right. One of the things that you can do instead is to simply turn off that account, make it inactive.
Inactive, disable, yeah. Whatever it says.
Okay, it just gives me the choice of just remove account, but I didn't go
No, you don't want to just remove the account. What
you can disable it.
What you want to do is disable it.
Where do I go for that?
I don't have it installed. I can't tell you right off the top of my head. But when you go into the account settings, one of the things you can do is there's a checkbox that says check for mail every X minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Uncheck that. It won't check for mail anymore.
Oh, okay.
And then now it'll never look for your mail. It'll never download it on that machine.
There's another one about include and send receive. So when your husband gets his mail, it won't try
right,
to get yours,
right. So
too.
you want to uncheck both of those, and basically it'll just be a kind of semi-dead account. All the email will still be there. You'll be able to go in and use it if you want to. And then in a couple of months when you don't care about any of that mail anymore, you can actually delete the account.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah,
I really like Thunderbirds.
Where is that? Under tools, under server settings, you can check for messages at startup, uncheck, check for messages every X minutes.
Right, right. And you can do all of that stuff, and that lets you decide how to handle that. It's there's a lot of flexibility if you understand what all the little checkboxes do. All right, we are going to take a break. It's time for the news, the weather, the sports. All the important things that you normally listen to the radio for.
Under advance, then under pop, then uncheck, include this server when getting mail.
There you go. here on Wham. And, of course, all those little monetary dramas that are so near and dear to our hearts that let this show continue every week. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who once again has donated his time and his considerable talent to actually recording the show so that we can keep the archives not only up to date, but sounding as beautiful as they deserve to sound. And, of course, Rob Linton, who is both long-suffering and deserving of all of it. Me, Nick Francesco. It is 58 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back on the other side of all of that with sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Sound Bites. You know, every week here at Soundbite Central, we do a poll at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was which high-def DVD format do you have? 315 of you voted, making it number 139 on the all-time hit list. The choices, of course, were HDVD, Blu-ray, not interested in waiting for the shakeout, because as you know, HD-DVD lost to Blu-ray last week officially. There were over 2.5 million, was it, HD-DVD recorders in existence and about 250,000 Blu-rays, and so the Blu-ray won.
Well, it's the old Blu-rays better. HD-DVD was cheaper, and it's surprising that Blu-ray won.
Yeah, it really is.
And actually,
really
HD-DVD players you can get for like $80 now.
Yeah,
yeah, right, because what are you going to do with them? So the 315 of you voted, 52% of you were waiting for the shakeout, 36% are not interested. 22 of you had Blu-ray, and a sad 16 of you had HD DVD. This week's poll comes from, as often it does, a story in the news. RFID, the radio frequency ID cards, those little chips that they put in things, they're fitting them into credit cards, you know. They're RFID-fitted credit cards, and they are the swipeless kind, the kind where you can just, instead of having to swipe it through a thing, you just bring it near a reader. You've seen all the new readers, and that, and then the MasterCard did it. Where, you know, the guy in the race who runs into the store and doesn't have to swipe his card. He just waves it at the reader, you know, and then goes out and wins the race. They're not as safe as you might think. I, of course, never thought they were safe to begin with. In fact, they can be read while they're sitting safe in your wallet. The attack can be carried out with off-the-shelf hardware and freely available Python scripts. Python hacker Adam Laurie took the stand at the Black Hat DC 2008 conference to demonstrate major security failings in the radio frequency identification tags used in these credit cards, and also, by the way, in passports and in your clothes and in everything else. Asking for a volunteer from the audience who had a smart card on or about his person, hacker Laurie waved his magic RFID reader at the suddenly famous attendee and succeeded in popping their name along with the account number and expiration date for their RFID-enabled American Express credit card up on the big screen without ever touching the man in question or even removing the card from his wallet. Laurie has spoken to the American Express people in the past and voiced his concerns over his ability to read credit card details remotely. The company's response, we are comfortable with the security of our product. I wonder how comfortable their customers are right this moment. In mitigation, the company issued a statement that the account number visible from this magic wand attack isn't the same as the one on the front of the card, but Laurie has countered with reports that the account number is still valid for online transactions, which isn't very reassuring. RFID tags, tiny chips that are, which use the power gained from a radio field of a particular frequency, broadcast stored information, are popping up pretty much everywhere, from PATS, which stores a unique identifier so lost PATS can be returned to their owners, to CLOES, which allows for efficient tracking of stock levels and for theft protection. But the worrying trend is for rather more valuable items to come thus equipped. Anyone who has renewed their passport in the UK recently, and also in the US, will be familiar with the sight of an RFID chip attached to a full-page-sized antenna, which contains the full details of the passport, including a digital photograph of the owner. The sort of information, in fact, which would be of interest to identity thieves, who must be rubbing their hands with glee at the thought of being able to harvest personal details from anyone who walks within a 10-meter radius of a scanner. And that's Metric. Laurie makes the tools he used to carry out the attack available to interested parties on his website. Until such a time as companies start taking the security of contactless data transfer more seriously, I would recommend lining your wallets with tinfoil. It's not just for blocking out alien mind rays anymore. They actually will sell you a essentially tinfoil cover for your passport.
I would make one.
Yeah.
That's how scary that is.
Yeah, it is. And wallets, I'm sure, will soon be coming with tinfoil linings in them. But you can do that yourself right now.
I'm thinking now there are big Altoids mints cans.
Yep.
That I'm going to start carrying around if I have documents like that.
Yep. That's the way it's got to work, because otherwise your information is just out there. So the poll this week, do you own a contactless credit card? The choices are yes, and I'm keeping it. Yes, but not for long. No, but they sound like a great idea. And no, and I never will. So far, we've got about 86 votes. 70% of you say no, and I never will. Although, I believe that is actually optimistic of me to have written, because I suspect they're all going to go that way in the future. So join us at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, and vote in the poll. When you're done voting in the poll, of course, I know that's not enough for you, just clicking on a button. So you also get to give us your opinion. Take a look at that little yellow box. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Yeah! very subtle.
Cool. And cruel.
And very cruel. Where you can actually put in your opinion. While you're there, take a look around. I put out a newsletter 3 times a week with all kinds of interesting tips and tricks, rants and raves, questions and answers, websites of interest, blah, 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 blah. Forums where we do all kinds of interesting things. Of course, if you're a member, you can also search my old newsletters for all kinds of stuff. There's thousands of them in there, and you can search for all kinds of information. And it's only $15 a year. I have no idea why you're not already subscribing, even as we speak. And of course, you can always buy things at the Ask Nick shop, bags and t-shirts and all kinds of things, as well as, of course, and it's a random, I've forgotten I'd done this, it's a random thing. Every time you do it, you get a different set of things. the Ask Nick clock. I don't know why everybody doesn't have one. All right. At any rate, that's what you get at Ask Nick. And then, of course, join us on the Soundbites website for all much of the same, actually. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, who wants to talk about the credit card chips. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Suppose we jump into the future, say a week from now, and all these security countermeasures are in place. I'm sitting in the coffee shop with my laptop, with my scanner hidden in the battery compartment, plugged into the wall. How many milliseconds will I have to scan their credit card as the gentleman removes it from his tinfoil liner and gives it to the cashier?
Well, he doesn't give it to the cashier. He just presses it up against the little reader in the front. And you've probably got 3 or 4 seconds, which is enough to... All you need is a couple of milliseconds. I mean, it's literally, you don't need... You can be up to 30 feet away. And as the person takes it out of the wallet and then scans it and puts it back on the wallet, you had more than enough time to read it 100,000 times over.
So then those foil pouches would actually be useless, and all American Express is doing is kind of like, you know...
Well, pouch is only useless... If you use the card that's in it, yes.
It's going to drive us all back to using cash.
Right.
Same thing would apply to, like, the passports, too. They could, you know, if you were standing in line and had your passport out of the pouch, they'd scan that, too, right?
Yep, absolutely.
It's a wonderful world, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm glad I'm still using Windows 2000. I don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
Well, you do have to worry about viruses and things, but make sure you stay up to date on all of that.
Oh, I love your security tango.
Thank you
very much for that.
Thank you very much. And you're right. It is... You know, the thing is, they look at it and say, well, this will be useful and nice for our customers. This will be convenient for them. Nobody thinks about the security implications until they get the black eye. You know, and then somehow it's going to be, well, I had my identity stolen. Well, how did that happen? I don't know. Yep. Well, somebody sitting 30 feet away from you in a cafe stole your identity. That's how it happened.
Well, like I told you last week's rant, I got a friend that $48,000.
Yep.
Identity gets stolen.
And a lot of this, it's interesting to see the morphology of how these things progress. You know, a couple of years ago, we were talking about bluejacking.
Right.
When Bluetooth phones first started getting popular, you could send a text message over Bluetooth. Ooh, what a nice dress you're wearing.
Yep.
30 feet away. And now that's progressed into identity theft.
Yeah. If you've got a Bluetooth phone, by the way, please take my phone number out of it. I don't want it getting around to everybody who might happen to just grab all your information off your phone.
Unfortunately, now most Bluetooth phones have Bluetooth off unless you specifically turn it on.
And a lot of them, once they've slaved a device, that's the only device they'll slave. Yeah. But not all of them.
Not all of them, yeah. Was it Paris Hilton got her BlackBerry content stolen or something like that?
That's the other thing about BlackBerry. Now, I haven't looked at it in a year or so, but last year when I was looking at it, every message in a BlackBerry went through the Bez server, the BlackBerry Enterprise server, at RIM in Canada.
Yeah.
I don't know if I, as a person involved in my company's secret stuff, want all my data going through a server somewhere in Canada.
And even,
I certainly don't know if I, as a United States senator or a Congress individual, want the stuff I send through my BlackBerry going through a server in Canada. Only, even in these parlous times where we know the terrorists lurk around every corner, nobody in Washington seems to care about that.
And getting across the Canadian border is pretty easy. And the other issue with the BlackBerry is that if you use the secure Opera Lite web browser,
right,
the connection is secure between you and RIM in Canada. There, it gets unsecured and passed along,
right,
because of all the caching the browser uses to make it faster,
right. And everything you browse is somewhere in a server in Canada. I don't know why the United States government lets our data sit in a server in Canada, but they do, and that's, I guess, their business. All right, our next caller is
Nobody
Phil.
Knows.
From Pittsford, New York. Well, yeah, and that's the problem. We make all these laws and we do all these things in complete and utter ignorance.
Well, the Canadians are such nice, friendly people. They wouldn't do anything bad.
They are, eh? Except for those kids in Quebec, remember?
Yeah, the 100 kids in Quebec.
Right.
Yeah.
All right,
Quebec. That's
yeah, that's Quebec. They don't even speak English. They're not even going to know what we're saying. All right, our next caller is Phil from Pittsford, New York. We're going to get calls from Quebec next. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. Enjoy the show. Got a wireless network set up in the house. My wife's got a desktop. I've got a laptop. Our daughter's coming to visit. Got a laptop. It's an encrypted system. How do I enable her to be able to get into the wireless network?
You've got to give her the key.
Okay.
The same way you set up yours.
Okay.
Yep.
It's exactly the same.
Just give her that same key code or password. And she'll be able to get into it while she's
Now,
there.
You got
to
remember which way you set it up. Is it WAP? Is it WPA? Is it WEP Personal, WEP Enterprise?
Yeah,
I mean,
I got that.
You got to know all of that stuff. Yeah. But once you know all of that, and once you know the password or passphrase or however that's put in your manual, you just give it to her. She installs that, and then in she goes.
And then when she's done with the visit, you may want to change that password. Nothing against her, but now your password is on her computer. That might be compromised somewhere else.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to tell you, I did download Firefox during the holidays, and it's a great browser.
That's what I like to hear.
It's much quicker, and it's more secure. I still have to use Internet Explorer for some things from work because they don't work on Firefox.
It's only
two or three websites and everything else I do on Firefox.
That's what I like to hear. Yep.
That's great.
Excellent, Phil. Thanks. Thank bye-bye. We're going to take a break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, who controls our entire lives. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We are indeed Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Things are getting ruder and funnier over on the Soundbites chat room in IRC. Remember, if you want to join us there, it's actually fairly easy to do. All you have to do is go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And during the show, you can very easily join us just by going into our, right on the main page, pick a username. It defaults to SB underscore in some random 5-digit number. But you can change that and click the login button, and you will be joining us in the Soundbites chat room. Of course, if you have your own IRC client, that's a little better, actually. That way. So we apparently have more fun in there than we do on here because we can be ruder and more and less PC. Microsoft has, I hope you're all sitting down because they're ice skating in hell tonight. In an apparent bid to calm still feisty regulators all over the world, Microsoft has agreed to publish their application programming interfaces, their APIs for their major software products, and provide free access to those interfaces. Let me repeat that. Microsoft is publishing their APIs for free.
What's the catch?
Well, that's a good question. They will also free up protocols around their client and server software, and they have vowed not to sue open source companies that create non-commercial versions of those protocols, like, for example, the folks who do Samba.
In other words, they want other companies to fix their product.
Well, yeah, well, what's happened is this. Regulators all over the world, particularly in the European Union, are saying that they are a monopoly because they are so closed and they don't play nice with others and they have never learned to share.
Well, we knew that.
And the European Union has specifically said, if you don't change your practices, you can't sell here. The people in the European Union have chutzpah and I can't think of the word, but stuff we don't have.
Cojones.
Cojones that our American...
apologies to our Spanish-speaking friends.
Right. That the American lawmakers clearly don't have either that or the bribes in the EU weren't big enough. I don't know which. But the point is, the folks at the EU says, clean up your act or don't play here. And Microsoft has been unable to get them off that stance in 4 years. And they are finally conceding and learning to play nice with others, at least in the EU. And if you're going to do it in the EU, information is free. It's going to get here anyway, so they're opening them up all over the world. I am thrilled and delighted.
The danger there is now that those APIs are published, the bad guys have a chance to look at them too and make things worse.
Which has always been their main point, but they're so riddled with holes to begin with. That's hardly, so what?
Yeah, the less sophisticated bad guys.
Right. Well, you've always been able to buy the APIs, buy access to them under a license agreement. All you have to do is suborn one of those people and you've got them anyway. All the bad guys have had them for years. It's the good guys who've never had a shot at them. Specifically, Microsoft revealed it will publish the APIs for Vista, Server 2008, SQL Server 2008, Office 2007, Exchange Server 2007, and Office SharePoint Server 2007, which are all basically the same API set because they're all basically the same product, except Office is a little different. Developers do not need to take a license or pay a royalty or other fee to access this information, they said. Open access to this documentation will ensure that third-party developers can connect to Microsoft's high-volume products just as Microsoft's other products do. It's pretty astonishing. It used to be you had to get a trade secret license, which is way more serious than just a non-disclosure agreement or anything like that. They're also going to highlight which protocols are covered by its patents and will license all these patents on reasonable and non-discriminatory terms at low royalty rates. They also have pledged not to sue developers who craft open source versions of their protocols. Again, that's things like Samba and the various documents. The people at Microsoft have just gone nuts. Microsoft also plans to provide detailed documentation on how it supports industry standards and extensions. The company has also pledged, wait for it, to support other documents formats in Office 2007. It's going to craft fresh APIs for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint applications that will let developers plug in their own document formats and even set those formats as the default for saving files. So if everybody wanted to use the ODF format, an open document format that OpenOffice uses, and thus make it universal across everything, you can do that now. And this is like, it's a 60s flashback for me. It's the era of free love and free APIs, you know?
Richard Stallman must be so proud.
He's probably just, yes. Yes, giddy. He probably is. Giddy. It's just nuts. Of course, we've heard these sorts of promises from Microsoft before. Personally, I'll wait to see the proof before I taste the pudding or drink the Kool-Aid. But I'm shocked that they even said they would do it, whether or not they ever actually do.
They're going to release them for Windows 3.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't say what version of Windows.
Yeah, right. All right. Our next caller, while we wait for the era of free everything, we'll go back to the phones. And our next caller is Carl from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Carl. What's your question?
Good afternoon, Nick.
How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Peachy, thanks.
That's great. Okay. I'm having a little email difficulty. Okay, I'm with Frontier, and I use Outlook Express as my server. And I can send emails with no problem, and everybody can send me emails with no problem, except when they come from Yahoo. And what's happening is it's either bouncing back to them as a failure notice, saying that my server's busy, or that it's full, or my mailbox is full, or I'll get the email in 6 hours, or I'll get the email in 2 days.
Or never. Yes.
Or never.
Yes. Right. And yes. And here's the reason for that. I thought we reported on this last week. Maybe we didn't. Yahoo has been a haven for spammers, and it's a real problem there, and a lot of companies are either delaying or just dumping email coming from Yahoo. You're not the only one. Everybody's okay. Doing it. They've been listed as a major spammer, and a lot of places just automatically dump the emails that come from them.
And even if it doesn't get dumped, if Yahoo is getting a billion messages a day of spam, their mail processors are so slowed down and so overwhelmed, that's why you're getting the messages hours later, because it finally got around to it.
I thought maybe it was my security that was...
No, it has nothing to do with you and everything to do with the fact that... How do I put this? Yahoo used to be a very good place to host your email.
Well, same thing at Hotmail is happening, too, and Hotmail's even worse.
Neither one of these really should be considered as a place for someone who wants to be respected.
Gmail's going bad, too.
Well, Gmail's having their own set of troubles, yeah, but, you know, I have one of my professors has his account at Hotmail, and every time I look at it, I think, I thought he was better than that. You know, I know he's better than that, but that's where he keeps his mail. But the reality is that this is a problem all over the world. It has nothing to do with you.
Okay.
And I don't know that there's much you can do about it at this point.
Well, it's interesting because what I want to do is get back to my friends that are, you know, because we're
politely recommend they use a different mail service.
Yeah, and actually some of them do have a couple of different mail services. And when they send me something through Roadrunner or something, it's there right away.
Yep.
And so I guess this will kind of just finalize everything for them.
We've actually seen some of the same problems with Apple's .Mac mail. It seems to be a little too aggressive in its spam filtering, and some people have trouble sending mail from
.Mac, they're all
Mac
picking
too.
Up the same couple of dozen blacklists like Spamhouse and a couple of others, and Yahoo is on them because there are a lot of spammers on Yahoo.
Every now and then, Roadrunner, r.com gets blacklisted because somebody on Roadrunner's millions and millions of customers started spamming, and so the entire Roadrunner domain gets blocked.
Yeah, well, one of the things is most of those blacklists are just a little too aggressive, but even so, Yahoo is on the list semi-permanently, it seems, so I guess it's time to tell your friends, no mas with Yahoo. Sorry. There's nothing else we can do about that. All right, our next caller is John from Ontario, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm having a little annoying problem, and that my display will not get to either the screensaver or turn itself off, as I've asked it to repeatedly. and it just stays on. I've got the settings correct in the display and then in the power options.
Well, the settings are based on idle, you know, after 10 minutes of idle blackout.
Right.
And so it's likely your computer isn't idle, and so the idle delay never occurs.
So that I needed to turn off the hard drive?
No, no, it's more likely the mouse. I have seen systems where, this is the weirdest thing, if the mouse is in one part of the mouse pad, it goes off. You put it in another part, it doesn't go off. Now, is it unsteady there? Is it got something to do with the pattern on the mouse pad? I don't know any of that.
Somebody walking across the floor jiggles the mouse enough?
Right, exactly.
The easiest thing to do is just hit the power button on the display monitor and turn it off that way.
Well, yeah, that's obviously what I do. But
yeah, well, that's the best thing to do.
I actually have that problem with my Mac Mini. There's some key that on the keyboard that every once in a while just decides to start popping off, and the display won't go away. And sometimes, again, it's the mouse.
And in a Windows machine, it's more likely in a Windows machine, there could be some spyware in the background doing something. Right. Preventing it from going idle.
Yeah, I've run the Tango twice.
Right. So I suspect it's hardware.
Bring up your task manager and see if there's... Well, see, that's the problem. You bring up your task manager.
And there's 700
processes. In fact, I just did that on my computer. My Mac is making these weird beeping noises.
Yeah.
And if anybody knows what the process KRB5KDC is, let me know.
Yeah, right.
Do a Google search.
I did. It seems to be something in the Kerberos 5 documentation directories. It keeps popping up as
excellent.
So something to do with Kerberos. But yeah, right. I didn't know I was using Kerberos.
Here's what one of the things that I tried that actually worked every once in a while with someone, I'll have them turn their mouse over when they're done working and see if the thing then goes to sleep. That will tell you at least if the mouse is the problem.
Yeah. Well, I have all kinds of processes here. I have no idea what most of them are.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It may not be a software problem.
Okay.
One of my faculty called me and said, it never goes, blah, blah, blah. I went to his office and I moved the edge of a file folder off his escape key. it's not always a software problem is what I'm saying. Okay. So,
and the other way too, a lot of times the space bar file folders would get stuck on the space bar or the arrow key.
Right. Yep. So yeah, I would suggest, and sometimes it's just, do you eat at that keyboard? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, right. So start by turning the mouse upside down. See if that actually solves the problem. Seriously.
Yep. Give it a shot. Let us know.
All right.
Especially, you know, if your table's at a slight angle, it could move a hair.
Mm-hmm. Right. You could also just unplug the mouse. Yeah. That's the other thing you can do. But with most modern operating systems, you plug it back in, it'll find it in a couple of seconds. So that's really not a problem. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm fine. I was calling about the lady who had the problem with email, but very quickly, the last caller, if he's got Super Anti-Spyware loaded, he can right-click on the icon in the system tray and say, find out what's running on my computer. It will, after a couple minutes search, give you a complete list of all the processes running on your computer, the name of the file, and then the software it's attached to.
Yep.
So then you don't have the, gee, what's that weird name and... Do I have to go out and Google search it? Or it'll tell you.
Nice.
It'll also tell you if it recognizes it as a safe process. It's an unknown. For some reason, the ones that go with my scanner are unknown, but I know what they are. And then it also has a section for hazardous processes. So if it finds one that it knows isn't playing nice, it'll tell you what to get rid of.
Yeah, Super NS Spyware is a very good product. Thank you for that. Thank you.
All right. Now to the reason I originally called.
Right.
Before I digress. The lady was having trouble with the email. She gave the computer to her husband.
Right, Mary.
Yeah. She didn't say what operating system she was running. She also didn't say if she'd created a separate user account for him on the machine.
Yeah, she did say that.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, I missed that. I'm sorry. With Firefox, or Thunderbird, rather, excuse me, right church, wrong pew, you can make it give you a window that opens when you first come up, and you pick the email account you want. Most people just click that and say, don't show it, because they only have one email account.
Right.
But when you put the second email account on it, unclick that box, you then can choose from the email account you want, and then you never accidentally open the other person's email.
Right. That is true.
I have two accounts, because I had one for business and one for my own, so I just have that continually open up, and I just click the one I want. And it will highlight the last one you used, so it's you just say okay, and you bounce right in, and it just stops that whole annoying thing until they get to the point where they can... remove her, you know, it's far enough out that she doesn't want to save anything anymore, and then they can delete it.
Excellent, Andy. Thank you. This is what I love about our callers. Together, we all know more than any of us, and I appreciate that, Andy. Thank you so very much. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you have got something. Us. Soundbites.
See, I didn't know we could see Rob.
We can always see Rob. Well, we can always see Rob when he's in the...
Well, I mean on the camera. I didn't know that they had that.
Oh, yeah, they do. That's why he's always saying, I can't tell you what I really think of you until we're off camera. Haven't you ever listened to anything Rob has said?
What
ever?
I can usually actually do is hide behind this over here, and then the camera can't see me, but you guys can. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying because you've done it.
You think? Wait a minute.
You've seen it.
You think I'm going to answer that question?
Yeah,
you
better not answer that question.
Ding straight.
All right, here's a great one. High tech rumors sometimes amount to a little more than hot air, but a new one circulating about Google doesn't involve hot air. It involves hydrogen. That's hydrogen-filled balloons, to be exact, and appears to be more than a rumor. Google is considering partnering with or even buying a company that provides such balloons as a way to bring wireless access to rural areas, according to a story Wednesday in the Wall Street Journal, which cites people familiar with the matter. The company in question is Space Data.
Space Data.
And Google's interest in it could fit nicely into its new push into the wireless arena, not the least of which has been its recent release of the Open Handset Alliance of the Android mobile phone platform. Google spokes individual John Murchison declined to comment on what he said is market rumor or speculation. Space Data also declined to comment. Space Data SkySight Network consists of high-altitude balloon-borne transceivers that are launched twice a day that rise to an altitude of 60,000 to 100,000 feet. From that height, each creates a coverage circle of 400 miles. The network, which uses a portion of the 900 megahertz band of wireless spectrum, covers Texas, Oklahoma, most of Louisiana and Arkansas, and portions of New Mexico and Gulf Coast waters. Space Data's balloons remain aloft for about 24 hours after they are launched and are relatively unaffected by weather because of their high altitude. The FAA allows them to be launched without restriction because of their small size and weight, which is less than 6 pounds. That poses no threat to aircraft safety. The balloons are made of biodegradable latex that is designed to vent and return to Earth. When that happens, the telecommunications payload returns via parachute, where it is retrieved with the aid of an attached global positioning system. The balloons themselves are only worth about $50 a piece, but the transceivers are valued at $1,500 each, making retrieval critical. Google's interest in all this stems from the belief that the balloons could alter the economics of providing cellular and internet services in remote areas, according to people familiar with Google's thinking. So that would be kind of cool. Doesn't do anything for us. Of course, I'm still just outside the very last wireless connection. I'm just saying.
You string a cable down the street, you know?
Yeah, I know. I need a cantenna.
We're going to build your directional antenna. We'll get you fixed up, Nick.
Cantenna.com. Have you seen them?
Not yet.
Oh, check it out. Cantenna.com.
Just call Maggie and I'm sure she'll, you know.
Yeah, my buddy Maggie. Like, yeah. I'm going to call Maggie. Nick, how are you? Yeah, that'll work.
Any competent ham operator can pick you up,
Nick. She might.
You
never know. She probably listens to the show.
Oh, and remember last week, Steve, when you were saying, you know, you might get a call from Apple because Leo Laporte got a call and Rush Limbaugh. Nobody called me. Nobody from Apple really cares about me. I understand that. That makes sense to me. All right. Our next caller is Bert from Palmyra.
Hey, Bert.
How are you? Hey. Great show as always, guys.
Thanks.
Do you have a recommended either book or website for someone who's trying to wean himself onto all Linux all the time?
Start with Linux for Dummies. Seriously.
Yeah. Start with Linux for Dummies. There is the LUGOR, the Linux Users Group of Rochester.
Yeah.
We'll be meeting this Thursday.
I live out in Palmyra. It's really hard for me to get into those meetings. I'd love to, but...
Well, that's understandable, but at the LUGOR website, lugor.org, LUGOR.org, hosted, by the way, by the Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. The website is at least. They also have links to a bunch of other places where you can get information.
Yep. I plowed through a lot of it, and, you know, one of the things I want to do is just be able to fire into a terminal window and fix errors or load a program or, you know, and boy, it's a massive effort to plow through a lot of the information online about Linux.
Well, yes, and that's why sometimes the books are more helpful.
Okay.
I know there used to be a book called Command Line Linux, but I don't remember if it was for dummies or the idiot's guide to, or just whatever. You can also go to linuxcommand.org, which is all about the command line, all about shell scripts. In fact, if you type in command line Linux into Google, you get about 1.7 million websites, actually. I actually had to go back and look at the page, but
commandline.org.
Yeah, command line, no, linuxcommand.org.
Okay.
Right. And then if you type command line Linux into Google, there's a whole bunch of other sites, including there's a company that has a command line cheat sheet.
Okay.
Out there, which is actually very nice now that I look at it. I believe I'll be bookmarking that myself. All righty. We're going to take another Linux convert. We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 50 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Chris, you had another website.
Yeah, for the fellow who wanted the bird, it was, who wanted to know more about Linux. I came across, besides the standard linux.org, which is American standard reference point on the web for Linux information, there's a website called PolishLinux.org. That's Polish, not Polish, Linux.org.
Yeah, you say.
Polish website in Poland. It's interesting to see how they have their own grammatical errors in the translation when they think in Polish and write in English, but yeah. Certainly no more grammatical errors than on most American websites.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's very easy to read. Don't be afraid about reading this at all. Very, very good website for sorting out the different Linux distros, and has plenty of links for more information beyond what you might be seeing at the homepage.
Cool. All right. Our next caller is Mark from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, my question is, I'm using Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah.
Now, I have a new JVC camera hard drive.
Right.
When I bring the video over to I put it on the computer, but then when I set it to 16:9, play on my Windows Movie Maker, it won't stretch it out. It keeps it still compressed to like a 4:3 ratio. Is that anything you could help me with?
So it won't change the format at all?
Yeah.
You may have to start with a 16:9 project.
I did. I recorded in that. That's why I can't figure it out.
Well, in Movie Maker, I'm not quite familiar with Movie Maker, but in iMovie, it's the same thing. You have to tell it you're starting with a 16:9 project versus a 4:3 project, and then import the video.
Okay. Well, I could try that. I think I have tried that, but it didn't still work like that.
Mm. Or, you know, the other deeper question is, can Movie Maker work with 16:9 video,
yeah,
period?
Yeah.
Well, I did it with, I had DV format I put on there, and I got that to work right, but it won't do the hard drive stuff. It won't stretch it out, or maybe it's having compatible.
It's Windows, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You might have to go to a little bit better program.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah,
another question is, what is the format of the video? Is it AVC HD? Is it DV? Is it MPEG-4? That could be a limiting factor as well.
He's already gone,
but yeah, it may be...
Other things to check on,
yep.
In other words, if he can change his JVC camera to record in a different format,
yeah.
Yep, that's certainly... Or translate it once he gets it onto his machine. There are a lot of programs that'll write. Right. Our next caller is Jim from Victor, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Love the show.
Thank you. Real quick,
upgraded my machine to Vista.
That's an upgrade.
No, it's not an upgrade. It's a clean install. And I'm having trouble whenever I put a disk in that has, and I try to run a setup, I get the blue screen. The disk drive will play music, and I can access it and look and see what's there, but once I execute setup, it crashes. Any ideas?
Well, what? I don't know that that's a problem with the drive. That sounds like a problem with Vista itself.
Yeah.
Is it with anything you try, or is it with one specific disk?
No, any disk. And I did think it was the drive, so I marched off to the store and put a new drive in.
Did it have the Vista drivers, though? See, that's the thing that we're running into with a lot of these products. I mean, things work great with XP, but the minute you go to try them with Vista, they don't have the drivers, or the drivers aren't working correctly, and they cause the system to fail.
Well, I didn't think of that. I tried, this is while I was trying to install the software that came with it. It wouldn't work. But maybe if I went to the website, I could download the drive.
Yeah, right. I would check there first because, like I say, a lot of the stuff that it was even prepackaged. That's why we tell folks, even if you get something new from the shelf, it's new to you, but it could have been from the day it was packaged or even made and done, the drivers and everything else can be quite old.
Can I just piggyback one question?
Very fast.
I'm having trouble with it. What are you hearing from people? Pretty people happy with it?
Nobody's happy
with Vista because
the next version of Windows ME.
There's no drivers for older stuff. There's hardly any programs that run with Vista at all. Most people are downgrading.
Microsoft is even now telling people, well, you know what? If you're not running Vista, Windows 7 is coming, and here's what it's going to have in it. So even they've given up on it. And we're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Unfortunately, your best bet is to call earlier and more often, the Chicago style of calling. We will be back next week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who once again, like I said before, generously gives us his time and astonishing amount of talent. To make the archives work every week. Rob Linton, who whether or not he wants to be here, is here anyway, and we all appreciate that. And I'm Nick Francesco. We're Soundbites.